neighbors went to Shatterpot. Shatterpot has had its lassie. Roll over, crunch on, crunch on me. Roll over, crunch on me. Cavers went to trouble, trouble. They lay in the stumps, going cobble, 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 singing, "Bull, have a crunch, have a crunch on me. Bull, have a crunch on me." So they went to the swine puke passage. No, no. Forgot that one, sorry. Two boulders poised up in the air, menace the cave and adventures there, singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." The leader said with a puzzled frown, "They weren't there when the last came down," singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." They came to a boulder painted red, the sign on it said, "Mind your head," singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." They came to a boulder painted pink, the sign on it said, "Safe, I think," singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." They came to a boulder painted brown, the sign on it was upside down, singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." Yellow, painted boulder, painted yellow, the sign on it said, "Frostbite fella," singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." They came to a boulder painted green, the sign on it was most obscene, singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." They came to a boulder painted blue, the sign on it said, "Lord us through," singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." Sign on it said, "I'm alright, Jack," singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." "To be like pointing is my wish, to go down long churn hunting fish," singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." "Now see my column, how absurd, roaring like a clockwork turd, bold, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me." If you mention Swilton Sub, old Jim Giles, he gets the hump, singing, "Bold, have a crunch, have a crunch on me, bold, have a crunch on me."
Now, I'll tell you the tale of a climber, a drama of love on the crags, a story to pluck at your heartstrings and tear your emotions to rags. He was tall, he was fair, he was handsome. John Christopher Brown was his name. The very severeness nearly bored him to tears, and he felt about girls much the same. Till one day, when climbing at Ogwen, he fell, just a figure of speech, for the President's beautiful daughter, named Mary Jane Smith. Her figure was slim as an ape's needle. Her lips were as red as red wall. A regular tiger, she'd been up the Eiger. North Wall, with no pitons at all. Now, Mary had several suitors, but never a one would she take. Though it seemed that she favoured one fellow, a villain called Reginald Hake. Now, Hake was a cad who used pitons and wore a long silken moustache, which he used, so they say, as an extra belay. But perhaps we're being too harsh. John took Mary climbing on Fleworth and proposed while on Mallory's Crag. It took him three pitches to do it, for he hadn't much gift of the gab. He said, "Let's belay for a moment. There's a rock spike quite close to your knee. And tell me, fair maid, when we're properly belayed, would you care to hitch up with me?" Said Mary, "It's only a toss-up between you and Reginald Hake. And the man I am going to marry must perform some great deed for my sake. I will marry whichever bold climber shall excel at the following feat. To climb head first down Hope, without rubbers or rope, at our very next climbing club meet." Now, when Mary told the committee, she had little occasion to plead, for she was as fair as a jug-handle hole at the top of a 100-foot lead. The club ratified the proposal, and the president had to agree. He was fond of his daughter, but felt that she ought to get married between you and me. The weather was fine for the contest. The rocks were as dry as a bone. Haker arrived with a crowd of his backers, but John Brown strode up quite alone. A rousing cheer greeted the rivals. A coin was produced, and they tossed. "Have I won?" cried John Brown as the penny came down. "No, you fool," hissed his rival. "You've lost." So Hake had first go at the contest. He went up by the ordinary route, and only the closest observer would have noticed a bulge in each boot. At first he camped down the top pitches, applying his moustache as a brake. He didn't relax till he passed the twin cracks, and the crowd shouted, "Attaboy, Hake!" At the foot of the slabs, Hake stood sneering and draining a bottle of scotch. "Your time was 10 seconds, the president cried, consulting the treasurer's watch. "Now, Brown, if you'd win, you must beat that." Hero's sang-froid was sublime. He took one look at Mary, and light as a fairy, ran up to the top of the climb. Now, though Hake had made such good going, John wasn't discouraged a bit. For that he was the speedier climber, even Hake would have had to admit. So, smiling as though for a snapshot, not a hair of his head out of place, our hero John Brown started wriggling down. But look what a change on his face. "Prepare for a shock, gentle ladies. Gentlemen, check the blasphemous word. For the villainy I am to speak of is such that you never have heard." Rich Hake had cut holes in the soles of his boots and filled up each boot with soft soap. As he came down the climb, he had covered with slime every handhold and foothold and hope. Conceive, if you can, the tense horror that gripped the vast concourse below when they saw Mary's lover shoot downwards like an arrow that's shot from a bow. "He's done for," shouted several score voices. "Stand from under," roared John from above. As he slid down the slope, he was steering down hope, still fighting for life and for love. But it's not the expected that happens, in this sort of story at least. And just as John thought he was finished, he found that his motion had ceased. His braces, pre-war and elastic, had caught on a small rocky knob. And so safe and sound, he came gently to ground amid the deafening cheers of the mob. "Your time was 5 seconds, the president cried. "She's yours, my boy. Take her. You win." "My hero," breathed Mary, and kissed him, while Hake gulped a bottle of gin and tugged his moustache as he muttered, "Ha, my advances you spurn. Curse a chap that wins races by using his braces." And he slunk away, ne'er to return. They were wed at the church of St. Gabbro. And the vicar, quite carried away, did a hand traverse into the pulpit and shouted out, "Let us belay." John put the ring on Mary's finger. A snap link it was, made of steel. They walked to the taxis beneath an arch of ice axes while all the bells started to peal. Now the morals we draw from this story are several, I'm happy to say. It's virtue that wins in the long run. Long silken moustaches don't pay. Keep your head uppermost when you're climbing. If you must slither, be on a rope. Steer clear of the places that sell you cheap braces and the fellow who uses soft soap.
Listeners, take your pocket handkerchief to wipe away the tears of grief that from your eyes are sure to spurt when you do hear of Ethelbert, who perished as a sad result of shooting with a catapult. Now different boys will show the craze for catapults in varying ways. Some will try their skill on cats and dogs, whilst others will bombard their schoolmates unawares along the corridors and stairs. They'll even come to such a pass they'll fire their catapults in class. But Ethelbert was not content to limit thus his natural bent to one department of the game. All targets were to him the same. The little fly, so prim and neat, the noble beastman on his beat. However big, however small, he'd loose his pellets at them all. Oh, gentle listeners, aren't you sad that Ethelbert could be so bad? But listen on and you will see the fruits of his iniquities. A taxi cab whose speed was high, one day to Ethelbert drew nigh, who, reckless boy, reflected not, but took his catapult and shot a dart, which ended its career inside the honest fellow's ear. Another shot he then let fly, that which hit the honest fellow's eye. Now drivers find it hard to steer with pellets in both eye and ear, so from that narrow way and straight, that taxi cab did deviate. And as I said, its speed was high, so that is very likely why Ethelbert could not evade the sudden rush at him it made. When boy and taxi cab collide, then boy is on the losing side. And Ethelbert in pieces died, and that's a horrible result of shooting with a catapult. Now Ethelred was only three, or somewhere thereabouts, when he began to show in diverse ways the early stages of a craze for collecting the particulars of motorbikes and motor cars. He had a little pocketbook for numbers which he sometimes took, and though his mother often said, "Oh, do be careful, Ethelred, oh dear, what shall I do if anything runs over you?" which Ethelred could hardly know, and sometimes crossly told her so, it didn't check his zeal a bit, but rather seemed to foster it. Indeed, it would astonish you to hear of all the things he knew. He'd guess the make and get it right of every car that came in sight. He knew as well its MPG, its MPH, its LSD, what gears, pedal, brakes and what. In short, he knew an awful lot. Now, when a boy thinks day and night of motor cars with all his might, he gets affected in the head. And so it was with Ethelred. He called himself a Packford 8 and wore a little number plate tied on behind a bit of string and chunked and clunked like anything and cranked himself ever so before he got himself to go. He went about on all his fours, and generally to get indoors he'd press a button, then reverse, and go in slowly backmost first. He took long drinks from mug and cup to fill his radiator up. He said it kept his engine cool before he ventured out for school. And when he got to school he tried to park himself all day outside, at which the head became irate and caned him on his number plate. So day by day he grew more like a motor car or motorbike, until one day he wasn't well, and round him hung an oily smell. "That's odd," said he, "no motor gets an aching tum through taking in petroleum." With that he cranked himself, but no, he could not get himself to go, but merely buzzed a bit inside, gave a faint chug-chug and died. Now, as his petrol tank was full, they labelled him inflammable and wisely saw to it that he was buried safely out at sea. So if at any time your fish should taste a trifle oily-ish, you'll know that fish has lately fed on what remains of Ethelred.
Well, got a different sort of smell, and we know it very well down below. when we're under the floral street down below, and the water's round our feet down below. The fragrance, Mr. Cabbages and Deep, you may find a marguerite, and the thought is rather sweet. When we're Covent Garden way down below, in the merry month of May down below. The fragrance of the flowers gives us many happy hours, and we sing the roundelay down below. Hatton Garden is the spot down below, where we like to go a lot down below. Once a bloke in Leather Lane dropped a diamond down a drain, we'll be going there again. Oh, the hot chicks that you find down below serve to entertain the mind down below. There are watches what won't wind, all wrapped up in bacon rind, and that isn't all you find. Oh, there's something in a stir down below that has a strange allure down below. The magic of a drain is a thing I can't explain, but it's calling me again. Oh, she was lovely, boy, she was pretty. She took two of us upon her knee. How's about her little love? $1.50 is the usual fee. $1.50 is the usual fee. Oh, so I went up to her bedroom, to the place where she used to sleep. Straw-filled mattress on the floor. Kind of steady, but it sure was cheap. She was as swift as a slippery yellow, before I knew what she was about. She had grabbed my watch and wallet. Holy Moses, I cried out. Holy Moses, I cried out. Up came the whores and the sons of the bitches, oh, up to the tune of 40 or more. I left my watch and I left my wallet. I went a-high-trailing out of that door. I went a-high-trailing out of that door. Winnipeg City, I learned my lesson in Winnipeg City. I learned it there. If you visit a boring thing, you had better visit her there. You had better visit her there.
Thank you. cat. Oh,
rough a brave men and bold and quite unaccustomed to fear. And the bravest by far in the ranks of the shore was out of the Boulevard. If you wanted a man to encourage the band or harass the foe from the rear, Stormport or with doubt you had only to shout for Abdullah Boulevard. Now the heroes are plenty and well known to fame in the troops that are led by the Tsar. And the bravest of these was a man by the name of Ivan Stravinsky Savar. He could imitate Irving, play poker or pool, or strum on the Spanish guitar. In fact, quite the cream of the Muscovite team was Ivan Stravinsky-Shabar. One day this bold Russian had shouldered his gun and dumped his most truculent sneer. Downtown he did go where he trod on the toe of Abdullah Bulbulamir. Young man, quoth Abdullah, has your life grown so dull that you wish to end your career? Violin, fiddle, no, you have trod on the toe of Abdullah Bulbulamir. Said Ivan, my friend, your remarks in the end will avail you but little, I fear. For by this I imply you are going to die, Count Abdullah Bulbulamir. Oh, take your last look at the sunshine and brook and send your regrets to the Tsar. For you ne'er will survive to repeat them alive, Count Ivan Stravinsky Tsar. They fought all that night 'neath the pale yellow moon. The din, it was heard from afar. Huge multitudes came, so great was the fame of Abdul and Ivan's cabal. As Abdul's long knife was extracting the life, in fact he was shouting huzzah. He felt himself struck by that wily Talmud.
The memory, the night that I came home and found you weren't alone. You said he was a nudist who dropped in to use the phone. Oh, thank you so much. Sideways through the sewers of the Strand on a Sunday afternoon. Sideways through the sewers of the Strand will be our honeymoon. Ankle deep in sludge, dear, we'll walk hand in hand. They will say the sewers of the Strand are the finest in the land. I'm telling you, sideways through the sewers of the Strand, the paradise is for two. Who cares if the atmosphere is blue?
Yeah,
there is nothing wrong with an old British ball. So sideways through the sewers of the Strand with you.
One night she came close by my side when I was
She saw, she sighed, she danced and died. What was I to do? Jumped into my bed, my pretty maid, I said, I'll shield you from the haunted view. Towards the beginning of the year, she grew paler in her face. Thank you.